All right, good morning. Welcome back. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. My name is Oliver, and welcome back to another Discully episode. I am very excited to be doing this one this week. But before we get into it, I do want to acknowledge that CITR is live and broadcasting on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Coast Salish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. But welcome back, everybody, to another Discully episode. Like I mentioned, I'm very excited to be doing this one today because I'm actually coming to you guys live from London, UK. So I am actually not in the studio today, but I am coming to you guys live from the London, UK, because I came to visit my brother for his graduation during this time. He's graduating from the Royal Academy of Music, which is very exciting. And I actually have him here today with me to do an episode. But before I do get into talking with my brother about a great composer and actually the work that he has written himself, I do want to kind of state how Discully works for those who are new with us today. So Discully is basically a show where we talk all things music. We talk about one pretty mainstream artist or one artist who is more well-known. We'll talk about their music, their genres, how they came to be, kind of like their story. We go through their music. We listen to some of their music. And then once we are about halfway through the show, we're going to get back into our discovered artist of the week, which for this week is my brother Bruno. And we'll talk about their music, their work, their compositions, and just have fun with it and just get to know Bruno a little bit more. But now that I've given the whole spiel and the introduction for the week, Bruno, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I'm super excited to have you today. And we're just going to kind of get to know the world of classical music. We are moving away from, I guess, the pop that I usually do, but we will be doing classical music this week, which is not my forte, I'm not gonna lie. As much as I did do the piano, I did it for a very little amount of time. But my brother is someone who had started since very young and stuck with it to this day. But to kind of get a little sense of like what we're gonna be talking about today, do you want to kind of talk about who our artist of the week is, which is Manuel Maria Ponce?
Yeah, so Manuel Maria Ponce was a Mexican composer who was around in the late, early 19th century, late 18th century, who was a composer that kind of started the whole idea of classical music in Mexico, because that didn't really exist. And as you all probably know, with the colonial history that Mexico had with Spain, that kind of art and all that music became kind of a mishmash, and this classical music that came out of Ponce was kind of the first of its kind in Mexico at that time. So I thought I'd talk about him today because he's been quite an inspiration to me recently, as I develop myself as an artist here in London, and you know what it means to be Mexican and what it means to be a Mexican artist in the UK.
Wow, I think that's really important that you just mentioned that right now, because I feel like when it comes to classical music, a lot of the names that we hear, like Beethoven, we hear about Mozart, we hear about Tchaikovsky, Chopin, Strauss, but I feel like there are a lot more to classical music and people who made an impact in that world, like for one, Ponce, which, to be fair, I'm not going to lie, I didn't know who they were until you brought them up, and that was recent.
Yeah, I mean, Ponce is quite known to classical guitarists, which is an incredibly niche thing.
Okay.
But because he wrote an enormous volume of music for guitar, because his closest friend was a guitarist named Segovia. Mm-hmm. I think it was Manuel Segovia. I can't remember his first name. But Segovia was a Spanish guitarist, and they were very close. And he wrote quite a number of guitar pieces for him. But for chamber music, or for the type of music that I play, like as a cellist, he's basically virtually unknown. Mm. And I've had the great honor and pleasure to do UK premieres of his works here in London, because nobody has ever played them. Nobody knew about him. And part of my research during my master's degree was presenting this music to a completely new audience, even though the pieces are about 100 years old. But to the audiences, they sound quite modern, because his language is not one that people are familiar with.
Wow. So what you're saying is that, like, as much as his music was written back in Mexico and might have been known then, it never, would you say, like, it rarely made it over international waters, and you are.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, Ponce actually studied in Paris, in the early parts of his career. What ended up happening with him was that he went to study in Paris, came back to Mexico, but had to flee to Cuba during the Civil War, and unfortunately, a lot of his early music got lost or abandoned because, well, obviously Mexico was in a state of war, so there were different priorities. But Ponce was quite famous in Mexico, very famous actually, and he helped establish the university program that still stands today of music that later on, and this is another artist that I worked with, was Carlos Chávez, that Carlos Chávez would eventually also lead, who was kind of the last great of the Mexican composers from that kind of epic.
Right. And you mentioned that Ponce was very famous in the classical world, but when it came to guitars, would you say that's mainly because, like, there's a lot of, like, the guitar is used a lot in, like, Mexican music traditionally and culturally, with, like, the big one and also, like, the small ones when it comes to, like, acoustic songs that we have in that culture, our culture?
I think part of it, yes, I think it's because our culture tends to use guitars much more than to use like instruments from the violin family, such as the one that I play. But I think that one of the biggest proponents was that Segovia was a very famous guitarist, and the Ponce didn't have the same amount or the same type of famous artist to support him in other instruments, for example, like the cello or the violin or the piano, because he was a pianist himself, so he played a lot of his own works. But having a name like Segovia in Europe be the proponent for his guitar music and the fact that he spread it so much, that's I think why it probably survived more. But also the very important thing is that, as I've discovered through my research, a lot of the pieces that I've been researching about Ponce and in chamber music is that the rights were sold to the United States to like I think it was the University of Texas or something like that.
Right. Well, that honestly, that's a great way to really get once introduced, but I do want to kind of, like, bring it a step down and just kind of get first, I feel like, the basic information of Ponce. So what instruments did he play?
Ponce was a pianist.
Okay. But he wrote for
For
guitars,
anything,
for
but
everything.
he wrote for guitar, he wrote for voice and piano, he wrote piano concerti, a lot of different pieces for chamber instruments, like the cello sonata, the violin sonata. But he primarily worked, his most famous pieces are primarily for guitar and piano.
For guitar and piano.
Yeah.
And so
Respectively.
were you brought those pieces to the UK, and did you like were you was it performed in the sense that the way he published it made it to be, which would be piano and guitar, or was this a piece that he had written for, I don't know, violoncello or a violin, or did you adapt them to the cello?
So for the piece that the only one that I've done so far of his, which has been the cello sonata, that one was written for cello and piano originally. So I
Okay.
did not adapt anything. The version that I have is the newest edition that the university published, which I believe was 2006, was the last publishing of the critical edition.
So what, 'cause I do want to get to listen to a bit of Ponce before we get into more talking and more spieling, but what would be the first piece that we're going to be playing today?
So I think a good introduction to Ponce is one of his most famous ones. It's called Intermezzo Number 1 in E minor, which it was just part. Intermezzi are just kind of well, they directly translate to interlude. It's just kind of a bridge to something. So traditionally, these things would be put in operas or suites where it would be like a short character piece that would separate the more dramatic existential for something more pretty and light, like salon music, which was a very big thing during this time period. Salon music meaning music that could just be played in your living room to enjoy without, crying or having an existential panic.
Okay.
So yeah, and so I think that this piece is a good introduction. It's one of his most famous pieces. For some classical musicians, they might have already heard it, but just not known who had written it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think that's a pretty good place to start.
Perfect. So we'll listen to that song and then we'll get back to it. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, and this is Bonse with Intermezzo Number 1. Alright, welcome back. You listen to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, and that was Manuel Ponce for the first piece of today's episode. Anything you want to like give us now or explain now that we've listened to this piece?
I think to help kind of for those of you who maybe know a bit of classical music is that this style is very much reminiscent of the old tradition established by Chopin and Liszt. Meaning that these short character pieces for salon music, they kind of dominated that trend, and that came about in Paris mostly in about the 1840s, 1850s especially, and that it stuck and has still stuck. That's still a very popular genre within the classical music community. These shorter salon pieces. Yeah, I guess I'll start with that now.
And I was going to ask you, just because you mentioned like shorter salon piece, and you also mentioned interlude, because I have mentioned before like interludes in albums and how they're bridges to connect songs within an album.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that classical music usually runs long. Yeah. Usually pieces are quite long, over the standard amount that we're known to, with like 5 minutes-ish. Was Ponce mostly known to be writing these type of interludes, or would he also like, did it vary? Did he also write like, you know, longer pieces? Or do we mostly find, like, you know, like interludes within his work?
I think Ponce has quite a large amount of pieces that are short like this.
Mm-hmm.
One of them that I can think of, for example, I think we'll listen to later, is Estrellita,
mm-hmm.
which was originally a voice for voice and piano and had lyrics to it. But the one everybody knows, at least to the classical community, is actually an arrangement done by Jascha Heifetz, who was one of the most famous violinists to ever live. And he had this tradition of playing a piece of music from the country he was visiting as the encore.
Mm.
And he arranged a version of Estrellita for violin and piano, which has been the most popular kind of arrangement of Ponce that has ever existed. And it probably is his most famous piece that everybody knows, just nobody knows who wrote it.
Wow. I feel like that comes a lot sometimes with some artists when they like write a piece and then nobody's really aware of who wrote it. And it kind of takes away from an artist's work, and it really leaves it up to someone, which off the top of my head is could be you, to bring light to this voice and an artist whose work should be recognized within everywhere. And for you, it's beginning in Europe and here in the UK. Is there anything else you want to add, or should we move on to the next piece, or any other information?
Yeah, I think one of the most important things is that yes, this is still within the kind of tradition, old tradition of romantic piano music, but I think there's something quintessentially Mexican about this, and it's that melancholy. When you compare Mexican folk songs and such, there's always this almost permanent melancholy that runs through all of our music. And I know that to many of you, like, oh, what, to some of you, Mexican music is kind of more cheery and party music, but the ones that are kind of more quintessentially Mexican tend to be very melancholic. And I think that's something that a lot of Mexican composers carried within their music, and I'm kind of a little bit guilty of it as well. When I write my music, I feel like I carry that melancholy, and that might just be because I grew up listening to that kind of music, and it just kind of stuck.
I think you bring up a good point. I will say to add that for me, there's two different worlds when it comes to Mexican music. There's obviously like the party ones, which you'll listen to with your family and go crazy. But I think there's also stereotypically, I want to say stereotypically, or like what people know, is that melancholy that you were talking about, but like the romantic music that comes with like the acoustic guitar of like when you picture like a guy who's falling in love with a girl and sings to this girl a very sad but loving song towards them, which is a good point that you bring up right now. But I did want to mention, actually, now that you mentioned melancholy, when I was listening to the piece right now, I like how the beginning was very light, it was very fluffy, it was very nice to the ear to listen to. We had like this really out of pocket kind of rapid fire on the piano where he just went crazy with the composition. But then it kind of, this is weird, this actually like came to my head, but it reminded me a lot. It might have been the chords because it was in a minor chord. It was very like the ending was very like 007 concluding. I don't know if that could have just been me, but the way it just kind of ended, I was like, this is very out of pocket for me. I was like, I could hear like someone's voice be singing on top of this music, kind of like the concluding of something, even though it was an interlude. Like that was 2.5 minutes of just piano, but like we kind of were in those 2 minutes. Within those 2 minutes, it was just like a high and low, and then the high with the burst in the piano, and then like a nice little, I guess you could call it a denouement.
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting point. There, I mean, the 007 chord is quite different than what it ended on. I believe the piece just ended on an E minor chord. But I think what you're getting at is that it almost felt like it had a sense of narration and a very singing quality. And that's actually a very, very important point to Ponce, because the government of Mexico actually recognized him as the writer, the official kind of state writer of Mexican song, because he was mostly known in Mexico for his songs. And I think a lot of what ended up happening to Mexican classical music is that it evolved out of the more, I guess, traditional serious concert music into the love ballads that everybody knows. Because if you listen to somebody like Armando Lara or other types of Mexican singers, even the old mariachis, the way that they wrote their music is very reminiscent of that tradition that Ponce started, especially for the piano music.
Could we also say like the original version of like La Llorona?
Yeah, exactly that too. Yeah, because I think that's what happened. I mean, some of these composers for Mexican songs studied with Ponce, or would have studied with a composer like Ponce. There were many during his time period. There was like Moncayo and Silvestre Revueltas and many others, but they wrote very different music than the one that Ponce had. But Revueltas and Moncayo and other composers still wrote songs and stuff. So that's kind of where the tradition ended up going to.
And so like now that you mentioned that, just to add on a little bit to his biography, was he a professor, a teacher, or did
He
he?
was a teacher. He was a professor. He was the professor of music, kind of one of the first ones, because he installed the music, the National School of Music, in Mexico.
Is this under La UNAM or is this different?
Yeah, well, what is the UNAM
What
now?
is now UNAM?
Yeah,
Okay.
what is the UNAM now is what he established, and he did have many private pupils. Famously, his last pupil, who I believe was a student in the United States, is the one who claimed his estate. And
Okay.
is the reason why a lot of his rights are in the United States.
United States. I see.
Because his he I believe he did have a kid or a couple, but I don't know why they didn't go to them. I know his wife, Clema Ponce, did have quite a bit of say in it as well, but I'm not really sure how that ended up, what type of legal battle that was, because the pianist that two student claimed that Bonzo had left him his entire musical estate, including recordings and manuscripts.
Well, that sounds very messy, to be honest.
So I really have no idea. It sounds like something to dig, but I
Yeah.
tried digging. I just got nobody to answer my emails.
Yeah, I mean, maybe just lay it to rest, and you're already doing a great job in bringing it to the UK. But moving on, I do want to play a little bit more of Ponce and, get to know it some more. Next up, I have Ponce Cello Sonata. Is there anything that you want to give us before we listen to
Yeah,
it?
so this was a very special one to me because this is the one that introduced me to Ponce. I was actually in Abuelita Lidia's house, which who you know was our great grandmother, and I was this must have been the year we visited her for her 100th birthday,
Oh, nice.
and I remember I was up in up in our bedroom and. It just kind of occurred to me, like, did Mexico have classical music? And so I did a quick little YouTube search, and the first thing that popped up was this recording of Ponce's Cello Sonata. And I was listening to it in bed, and I just thought, this is the most amazing thing. Like, I cannot believe that I didn't know about this. I'd love to play this. And I just kind of started to save many different other pieces and just deep dive into, like, how can I play his stuff? And it actually, because the pandemic hit, it put my research on hold. So, which is why I ended up doing here, because right after COVID finished, basically I graduated and came to the UK.
Right.
And my aunt couldn't get any of the archives because the library was closed.
Right.
So this is kind of what started it all. And it's also the piece that I had the UK premiere of here in London,
Okay.
and I've played it several times, not only for the recital that I did specifically for Mexico, but I also played it in my graduation recital recently, to the panel who was comprised of the head of strings and the vice president of the academy,
Wow.
and an external panel, because they had never heard it before. I kind of gambled a little bit, because when you play pieces that panelists don't know, sometimes they can be biased, or because maybe they didn't like the piece or you didn't present it well, they might give you an even lower mark than you would have gotten for other things. It really is a gamble.
Right.
I mean, yeah, I won't get into kind of what happens in competitions or exams, because that's a whole other podcast, but.
I mean, even just presenting the unfamiliar is obviously always a risk, but I applaud you a lot for it. And I do want to let people listen to this cello sonata. So you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, and this is Manuel Ponce with Ponce and Cello Sonata.
Thank you.
This is Kristen Carter. My debut contemporary pop album, Full Bloom, is now yours to discover. Full Bloom is a living garden of 12 songs that celebrates the beauty and the seasonal nature of life. You can find Full Bloom wherever you listen to music. Visit thekristencarter.com or follow at Kristen Carter Music for more. Funded by Factor and Canada's private radio broadcasters.
Are you interested in playing, watching, or discussing all things cricket? Look no further than UBC's Cricket Club. Reach out to @AMSUBCCricketClub on Instagram to get connected today.
All right, welcome back. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. Welcome back to the Scully, and that was Ponce's Cello Sonata, performed by you.
Yeah.
Well, it was a great job. It sounded lovely. But is there anything you want to say about it? I honestly found it just quite beautiful to listen to.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, I could go on for a couple of hours explaining, kind of, you know, dissecting the piece, but this piece was written in 1922 for a cellist, Oscar. Mm. Oscar Perez, I think it was, who is unfortunately lost to history, but he was a cellist in Mexico City. And the sonata was premiered back in, I think it was in, until about a year after two when the sonata had its proper premiere because of his exile in Cuba. Mm-hmm. And actually, one of the things in the beginning of the piece is that is a Cuban rhythm, which is in the piano. It's a Cuban quintanilla, mm-hmm. Which I guess he had kind of just homaged for when his time in Cuba, because he basically started the sonata in Cuba but finished it in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And what we heard now was just the 1 or 2 minutes of the beginning, which is what kind of caught my attention, because it's kind of immediately from the start has an incredible amount of personality in the piano already, quite unique. No cello sonata starts that way. Mm-hmm. Even from like the great composers like in Germany and the Germanic tradition have ever done.
Mm-hmm. I was actually going to mention to the audience, if you do want to listen to the entire Cello Sonata, it is, what did you say, 30 minutes? About 30 minutes?
About 30 minutes long, yeah.
So we did play just a little section of it for you guys to get a sneak peek of it and just kind of immerse yourselves into this music. But yeah, it's online on pretty much, I think, YouTube.
Everything.
Everything? Yeah. It's pretty much on everything.
Not by me, though.
Yeah, not by you, but...
But yeah, it's on everything.
Exactly. But all right, moving on from Ponce's Cello Sonata, just so we can wrap up Ponce a little bit and then talk about you, because I'm obviously very excited to talk about your compositions. The last piece that I have to play of his is Estrellita, which is a Spanish word and translates to little star.
Little star.
Little star. Do you know why?
It's because of the poem that it was written to.
Okay.
Which I won't read because it's a little long, but I remember the first couple lines is like, it has to do with something about the little star being alone up in the sky.
Oh.
And it wanting to kind of be part of a constellation.
That's quite sad.
And Ponce, the original version was written for voice and piano, with obviously the poem sung to it. But it, as I mentioned before, it was made incredibly popular by the violinist Yasha Heifetz. So I'll play a clip from him playing, from Yasha himself playing it.
Perfect. I think that's a great way to get into it. We'll listen to Yasha Heifetz's interpretation of Estrellita by Manuel Ponce. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Thank you.
right, welcome back. You listen to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. This is Discali, and that was Manuel Ponce with Estrellita. That is, I guess, a perfect way to conclude Manuel Ponce, which is our artist of the week. Thank you so much, Bruno, for giving us all that insightful information on Ponce that even I wasn't aware of.
It's my pleasure.
But a great segue to get into talking about you, Bruno. I know I've known you for so long, but if there's something that has always amazed me is how like you can write music, and you started at quite a young age, in composing your first piece, I think when you were 15 and finished it at about 16, 17.
I think it was my first piece that I had like the guts to put out in public. Because there was a lot of pieces that never made it out of the sketchbook, for good reason. I don't think anybody needs to hear those. But the first piece that kind of put me on the spot was my cello concerto. I wrote one movement of a cello concerto because in my high school, the tradition was if you were graduating and you were part of the arts program, you got to play a concerto with the orchestra because I went to an arts school.
Mm-hmm. Lord Bang for those in Vancouver.
Yeah. And back in the day, if any of you are from Lord Bing, we had Miss Kurth, and she was basically the one who had this program running where you would be able to play your concerto. Anyway, I decided, well, I've really enjoyed writing music. Why don't I make my life about 10 times more difficult to write my own? Because I think that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because I thought, you know, what's the worst that can happen? Also, am I ever going to get an opportunity like this again to do this? And if I'm interested in this now, I might as well do it now because I don't know if I'll be able to do this or have an opportunity like this again. So I did, and I wrote my cello concerto, and fortunately, it went very well. People really liked it. I don't think anybody expected it of me because I was quite a quiet person and didn't really say or do very much.
Even I didn't expect it, and I was there.
And I kind of like only dedicated myself to the cello, and I think, you know, It took a while for my parents to accept what I was going to do for a living. But I think for the most part, I also wrote in secret almost.
You did.
So I wasn't caught, you know, avoiding doing my homework. particularly my math homework, because I really hated math.
I mean, but you're still being productive. But then after that, like, you know, you went to university, you went to UBC, you studied under
Eric Wilson.
And you continued this passion that you had in composing, even though that wasn't your area of study.
So I've been playing the cello since I've been three. And that is still my main, you know, career, I guess. Now, more this year, I've been able to blend my career as a composer and a cellist, where people now know me as both here in London equally. But at the beginning, it was just as a cellist. And I'm actually self-taught as a composer. I never had lessons. I had tutelage last year for a term. I had you know, sessions with a composer at the academy, but formal composition lessons, I haven't had any.
Right. Yeah. No. I remember I was like, how did you learn this, and how did you were just like, I just kind of knew, because you know you learn how to write read music, you learn how to play music, you learn how to like be in music, but I feel like writing music is so much harder than people make it seem, because like just because you know how to read it, it's not like English. Just because you know how to read it doesn't mean like you know how to write it. It's kind of the same thing. It's a language. So you have to learn the two different ways, but for some people it just comes naturally.
I don't really know where it came from, to be honest with you. I think I've always just had a kind of... Writing melodies has always been easy for me. Like, I've never had to really think about how to write a melody. They just happen. For me, what's been actually, you know, kind of the learning curve is proportion and and form, proportion and form is how to package it all up together. Because I feel like I have a lot of ideas a lot of the time, and I have to cut a lot of them out or shape a certain way. Some people, it's completely different. People have a gift for form and proportions, but cannot write a melody to save their life.
I will say, though, I think you do have a gift in the sense of knowing what notes work. And I feel like, obviously, that comes with an artist. And being an artist and being a musician. But your sense of perfect pitch is always something that has surprised me and continues to surprise me, because you'll hear like an ambulance horn or something blow, and then you'll be like C major, A minor, F sharp-ish, major-ish.
Well, it wouldn't be a major anything.
It could just kind of like Charlie Puth.
Yeah. Like, Charlie Puth also does that. I think he does that for, like, his, like, content. But you just do it for fun. And every now and then I'm like, are you actually right? And then you, like, pull it up on the phone and you're like, beep. And then it's, like, exactly
I think correct. Most people don't believe me until they see me writing music without a piano.
But that's what I'm saying. You started writing music without a piano. And then you self-taught yourself the piano. Because I had a piano that I abandoned, of course. Mm. I had a piano because I played piano, and you just started like learning on the piano. You're like, whatever sounds right. You're like, okay, that's the note. That's the chord. And you had the little like helper so that you could know like what note was what note because you never learned how to play.
Yeah.
Piano.
I put mask and tape and
ruined
labeled
the piano. I'm just joking.
No, I didn't. And labeled the notes on the mask and tape. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
For me, for example, it's, I have synesthesia, which means that when I see, when I write music, I see color, or when I see color, I write music. That's how it works in my brain. So for me, a lot of the music that I write is a lot to do with chords and mm. color. So I have a little book that I keep with interesting chords that I want to use.
Mm.
And I feel like because I labeled the piano, it has let me in my head be able to close my eyes and see the letters mm-hmm. instead of the keys, which makes it, at least for me, is a lot easier because I'm not a pianist. I cannot play the piano. I had to take 2 years of piano in undergrad, but instead of doing the homework, I was writing music.
Right.
I don't know why they passed me, but.
but I do want to, now that's a great segue into this, the first song that I want to play of yours, which is one I absolutely love because you're talking about color and synesthesia and how like you see notes and you see color, you see notes. Noche Comino, which is honestly, I hope this isn't bad, but it's my favorite piece of yours. It's one that I can like envision and see this color that you're trying to present to your audience, to your listeners. Because even from the title, it's like noche means night in Spanish. Mm-hmm. Con vino is with wine, a night with wine. And for me, I just immediately picture like a really dark blue, like a sky blue, like a dark night blue. And then like a nice like red wine. I really don't picture white wine. I just picture red wine. That could also be biased from the cover that you painted yourself for this piece. But is there anything you want to say before we do get to playing the piece?
No, I guess kind of, one of my focuses as a composer is whether or not the image that I meant to portray in the music is correct. I never mentioned what color the sky was or what kind of wine it was, but I was picturing the things that you did describe, and I feel that most of the times when I ask my colleagues or friends or even random people who don't actually know that I've written the piece, mm-hmm. because sometimes I ask them after a concert and they'd have no idea that I wrote it, what they felt about the piece, it's more or less they say what I imagine, and that for me is that I was successful in conveying what I wanted to say in that piece. So I guess I'll just start with that and then listen to it.
That's awesome. So we're gonna listen to your first piece, talk about it, and then move on to a couple more of your work. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, and this is Bruno Quezada with Noche Comino.
Thank you. you're interested in maintaining a healthy lifestyle during midterms, finals, or any time throughout the year, then Freshie has you covered. Stop in today at Freshie on Westbrook Mall and order one burrito, salad, or bowl and get the second for free. Buy one, get one for free. Freshie on Westbrook Mall is your one-stop food as fuel choice for people on the move. Freshie. Eat. Energize.
By the way, this is somebody's favorite show. Hi, Dan Shakespeare here. You know, for most of the stuff that I play, you probably think that I'm much older, but you know what? Most of you are probably way off because I'm only 23 years old. Tune in to The Shakespeare Show between noon and 1 p.m. on Wednesdays. It's songs from before the 1920s to alternative stuff today, plus jokes and riddles, all sorts of fun stuff. Just put any of it on your iTunes if you need to. Pretty soon it'll be coming out on albums.
All right, welcome back. You listen to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, and that was Noche Combino by Bruno Quesada. Again, I hope everyone can see how beautiful that piece is and why I love it so much. But it's just so catchy. Like, it's a little bit fun. It's a little bit, like, cheerful. But at the same time, it's very soothing, very relaxing. Like I would describe, like, what wine is to me. Mm. But is there anything you want to say about it now that we have listened to it that might bring us clarity, bring us a bit more image to this piece of art that you have created?
So this is the first piece of music that I wrote once I had moved to London. Mm-hmm. And I started writing it, as most things happen, because I procrastinated on other things. And I was supposed to be practicing for my orchestral audition for the Academy, and I got distracted on the piano and wrote the opening bars on the back of one of the excerpts for it, and actually wrote it about my dad, because he had been over to help me move into my dorm, and we had had a couple of dinners, and one of them, because it was still, you know, the summer sun, even though it was September, kind of reminded me about that. I just kind of brought those memories to, mm-hmm. you know, so just having a it's basically the equivalent of just having a nice chat with somebody mm-hmm. over a nice glass of wine in a cool summer evening. You know, with that dark blue sky that you get, mm-hmm. there is really nothing else to it. That's just it. It's literally just a painted memory of mine.
Right. I think the reason why I love this one so much is the melody is very catchy, and I don't know if you did that on purpose.
I think because one of my closest friends, James, who helps me, he says that my melodies are catchy, but nothing is ever done on purpose. It's just how they happen to be. As I mentioned earlier, for me, it's really easy to write melodies. I don't mm-hmm. know why. Mm-hmm. But, that's kind of a feature of my compositions, usually, is a very clear melodic line mm-hmm. that, you know, tends to kind of stick in people's ears.
Mm-hmm. I was going to label it as fate. I was going to label it as an accident, but I guess it's not an accident. It's just something that naturally occurs within mm-hmm. your music. But anyway, moving on to your next piece that we have to play. Do you want to introduce it for us?
So this one was kind of a, not a response piece, because that sounds corny, but it kind of, after I played the Ponce, I figured, and my teacher actually had said, you should write your own cello sonata. And I never write for myself. Mm. I always write for friends. Mostly because I get really self-conscious if I write for the cello or I write for myself. I don't want everything to be about me, you know? Mm-hmm. So I wrote one. And obviously a huge inspiration for me was that Ponce, although it sounds nothing like it.
Right.
But this one I wrote, and I've only finished one movement of it, so you'll hear a small portion of that movement, or the movement itself. And this one I titled Cuentos. Cuentos means fairy tales in Spanish. Mm-hmm. Because I kind of envisioned in my head three short fairy tales to tell, and the first one is about, which you're about to hear, is about a prince whose carriage has broken down, and he's trying to see his love, and they're in the middle of a storm, and he can't quite get to the castle in time, And he misses her because he hasn't seen her in a long time. Is the desperation, and you know, again, I could go into detail for minutes or hours about how I've constructed it, but that's kind of it. And so at the beginning, it's the sound of his desperation. In the middle, it's memories of her, and then, you know, when the climax happens, it's him finally being able to see his love in the castle and have a dance there. And then it just kind of ends almost very abruptly, as if you've just woken up from a dream, as if it was all just kind of like a fairy tale.
A little nighttime story.
Yeah.
I'll call it that.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. I'm glad I'm ready to listen to it, honestly, and then give our thoughts after and wrap up the show. We are getting to the time where I do want to mention that at noon, at 12, which is right after the show, we do have Dave Radio Presents The Eclectic Lunch as our next show. So definitely do stick around and listen to that one, because it's always a good time with Dave. But this is Bruno Quezada with Cuentos Cello Sonata. You're listening to CITR 11.9 FM Vancouver. Alrighty, welcome back. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, and that was Cuentos Cello Sonata by you, Bruno. I was actually going to mention, like you were just telling me right now during the little break, you did post this on your Instagram, and you actually made it kind of like a little fairy tale itself, with kind of describing the story as you were playing it, with little like narrative words below your video. If anyone wants to go check that out, they can reach you where? Do you know your
Cello Quezada?
Cello Quezada on Instagram, and you can definitely check it out. But I feel like there isn't really much to say about that piece. It's very you can interpret it very much like a story. And it was very lovely to listen to. And we are coming to the end of our episode today with my brother Bruno. Again, I thank you so much, and I applaud you so much for all your hard work and coming onto the show and making the time to do this, again, live in London. This is so much fun. I've never done an episode internationally, if you want to put it that way. So thank you so much again for coming on. I really appreciate it. And to wrap it up, we have our last piece that you will be presenting that you had also written. Poems of the Heart String Quartet, and it's the third movement. Mm.
So yeah, this is one of the newest compositions with the cello sonata. They were actually premiered within 24 hours of each other. That's a crazy story for another day.
Okay.
But so I wrote this particular movement in Vienna, and I thought I'd include it in the closing sequence because I put a joke in it. It's kind of like a little self jab as a cellist. Everybody asks you to play a Pachelbel's Canon. If you don't know what that is, look it up. I guarantee you know it. Everybody plays it at every wedding.
Even I played it.
Every cellist just hates it when we get asked to play it. So, naturally, what I did was take the bass line that every cellist hates and rearrange it into, well, not even rearrange it, just build my own piece on top of it as a joke. So I put all of the themes from the other movements stacked against each other plus the joke. So I thought it would be quite funny, and it's quite upbeat and quite happy to kind of close the episode on that joke. And for those of you who are musicians, you will know, because it's quite obvious where it is.
I think even I did. I was just like, wait, I recognize that melody. Like, yeah, you sure do. But that's awesome, Runa. Again, I'm really happy you came on, and I'm really glad that you're ending off the episode with a joke. If you do guys want to reach out to me and know a little bit more about my brother, about my show, about anything, you guys can reach me at _Discali_ on Instagram, or just on the CATR website under the Discali name. One more time, Runa, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time, and I can't wait to present this piece to the audience. So you're listening to CATR 101.9 FM Vancouver. Have a lovely rest of your Friday. I'll see you guys next week. And this is Bruno Quezada with Poems of the Heart String Quartet, the third movement.